This is the song Running With Red off the new album called Floating Gardens. We're talking about lush musical soundscapes born in the Chippewa Valley on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Think of these dreamlike vocal atmospheres informed by place and producing ambient works of art. What do you want to know from a loop composer? Are you familiar with the nunnery's works? What do you want to ask her? 800-642-1234. Sarah Elstrand is known as the Nunnery, a Chippewa Valley-based artist. She layers her voice through a process called looping to create a soundscape. Sarah, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Good morning. Can you introduce us to your creative process and how you do these looping compositions?
Yeah, you're explaining it already so well in a way I don't even know if I could do better, but I do everything just with my voice and then simple percussive elements. I don't use any pre-recorded devices or samples or anything. So when I play live, I just layer my voice and then add a bunch of recorded layers on top of that in real time and end up creating kind of like a soundscape.
How do the technicals work? How does a loop station work? What are the tools of your trade, so to speak?
I've gone through a few loopers in the past. I started off with like a really simple Jam Man, which was just a single loop station. And then I've gone from just needing kind of more tools and volume controls, and now I have a RC-505 Boss Looper, which is mainly made for beatboxers.
Ah.
I assume. I think everybody kind of uses them now because it's becoming, I think, a little more popular to combine like guitar and drums in it, and the machine's just getting a lot more powerful, which is fun for me, but also I like to just really spend a lot of time with like one piece of gear before I feel comfortable playing it live.
Does your foot do the controlling, or how does that work?
This one's with hands, so there's five different. There's other loop pedals that are mainly 4 feet, and then so it's like four playing guitar or other instruments, so you can have your hands free. But these ones, because it's for beatboxers, with having the, yeah, it's definitely hand friendly.
We're talking with Sarah Elstrand, who is known as, on the stage, the Nunnery. We're going to get her on phone to get a better connection here. We're learning about her music as she layers her voice through a process called looping to create a soundscape. And her new album is called Floating Gardens. We're going to hear pieces from it. You can join in. What do you want to know from this type of a musician? Have you played before with looping, and what did you create, and what do you want to know about looping and this type of music? Join in at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas@wpr.org. Have you noticed that this artistry has been happening for a long time? Are there particular songs that you like that involve looping? Maybe you harken back to the British musician and composer Brian Eno in the 70s, who really brought that rise of ambient music or these atmospheric sounds. How do you think this music has evolved, and what do you appreciate about it? When do you listen to this form of ambient music? You can join in at 800-642-1234. Email ideas@wpr.org as we work to get Sarah Elstrand on a better line here. And her work, she's known as the Nunnery. Comes from the Eau Claire area, and this is her fourth studio album, and we're going to be able to sample a little bit of her latest work as she really explores this type of music, formerly a part of a band in a singing-songwriting tradition, and really broke away that as broke away from that and working with these sounds and atmospheric sounds to bring her own type of music. You can join 800-642-1234. Email ideas@wpr.org as we work to get Sarah Elstrand back on the line here. Sarah, are you with us now? Hi, Sarah. Are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Oh, good. Sorry about that. We were having some technical issues with your line. So when you're going back to the loop station here, can you add additional layers from what you've already recorded, or can you slow down or speed up the looping patterns?
I usually don't. Yes, I could. I usually don't mess with the speed, but I definitely add. Like, usually at the end of a song, I probably have, like, over 45 different layers of loops on one song.
Well, let's hear a song from Floating Gardens, and this is the album's namesake. Let's take a listen. Day, 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 day. Just keep listening, Sarah. Why did you call the album Floating Gardens?
It kind of came to be that it was definitely not intended in the development of it, but I love the concept of kind of finding your own sense of heaven, and that's kind of what that song's about, and ended up calling it that.
What about lyrics? Where do you draw from? Where do you find inspiration?
Oh, definitely just like the moment that I'm trying to capture, usually like an emotion, and then it comes from that. Because some of my songs don't have any words at all. It's just all based on like trying to capture like the feeling of a emotion with texture. And yeah, I don't know how to, it's so internal that it's like hard to explain, but. Yeah.
Hard to put it into words. When, you know, I'm just wondering what your aha moments are like. Like, you know, when do you have those moments when you hear a pattern or some phrasing like, oh, that will work? Or when do you know you need to abandon a sound? What is that secret to a loop pattern?
I think it's just getting really comfortable with yourself and then what you like, and then getting into just a familiarity of what sounds kind of reflect different feelings towards you. And I definitely have a preference of what I like to hear. So I definitely try to play things that I would want to hear again.
Because you're going to hear it again and again. You're going to have to get really comfortable.
Like, yeah, in real time, like right away. Yeah, immediately I'll know if I messed up and I'm like, oh, yeah, I've got to resort. And the pedal I do use because I'll play sometimes, I'll improv live, and sometimes I'll revert and delete the track I just played, because sometimes it's, you can go back, and then I have like 5 different loop stations you can add on. So it's nice to be like, oh, never mind on that, just quickly. But it's quick enough now where I don't think most people would notice, but it happens.
Well, improv, you can make those changes on the fly, but an album, that's an album. I mean, you cut it, that's there. I mean, that does that permanence kind of feel like, oh, I wish I could go back and tweak something?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's what makes recording in some senses a little more difficult, because it's so easy to be so tedious with so many different parts. And with recording, I usually kind of, the song will usually have a shift, because I have, it's easier to expand on it for a longer duration, which is nice.
Well, let's listen to the beginning of the song Jasmine, which is an example of how you do layer sound.
Thank you.
I kind of feel like I'm holding onto a rope and you're slowly drawing me in. I just, because I'm anticipating each, I don't know, each time there's something new.
Yeah. Yeah. That. Thank you. Cool.
What did it take for you to make Jasmine, and what was going on there?
I wrote that song actually for a film that I was scoring in 2020. And I added a bunch of pieces since that, and the film hasn't been released yet. But in the scene, I would be watching the footage, and I was scoring post. So I was looking at what I was going to be, where the music was going to be, and watching the actors act, which was really cool. And in the scene of the film, this character is meeting a friend, and she's kind of following him around this garden, which is funny because it had, I never really even put it together, that floating garden, and she's following him around. But for the first time, so it's kind of like a greeting, like a really timid, soft greeting, because she's really nervous to meet this person.
What is it like for you to do film composition instead of just any other type of, ability to just make music, but you're really having to look at a scene and kind of follow its lead?
Yeah, it's kind of, in a way, it's similar to how I play or would improvise live, but yeah, you're going directly to watching people act, which is extremely different. So it's not internal. It's, since you can see it visually, it's in real time. It's just you're trying to speak for the picture really quickly. And then while it changes, that definitely affects, like in the real time, it's totally different because somebody might have they might be in an argument or like the change of emotion just happens so quickly. So I react a lot differently, which is really interesting. It always brings totally different sounds.
We have loop composer artist Sara Elstrand, goes by the stage name The Nunnery, out with her fourth studio album called Floating Gardens. Have you experimented with a looping pedal? Have you built a song through repetition and layering? What was that like? Does the thought of being a one-person band interest you? 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with The Nunnery here on the Ideas Network. Yeah. Inspired by Gregorian chants and the seemingly limitless possibilities of sonic looping, creating these rich soundscapes, we're exploring music from The Nunnery on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Tool of her music is a looping pedal and reflections on what she sees in the world. Are you a musician? Have you tried live looping? What draws you into layers of vocals? What does it take? Where does it take you? 800-642-1234. Sara Elstrand goes by The Nunnery. Her fourth album is Floating Gardens, and she's with us for about 7 more minutes. Let's bring on a caller now. Julia is joining us from La Crosse. Hi, Julia.
Hey, good morning. So, Sara, I actually went to high school with you, and I do have a question. So, I don't know that I'd call myself a musician, but I've definitely performed live before, mostly just doing covers. And I make mistakes like all the time. And I'm just wondering, with your looping style, if you make a mistake live, how do you like bounce back from that? Or do you make mistakes? So that's what I'm wondering.
Absolutely make mistakes all the time. And I try to look at it kind of as not a mistake, though, or just maybe a segue. I know it's so different with guitar, because it's like if a guitar, like a chord you're playing is totally wrong, it's just a lot more apparent. But always just continue going rather than stopping and saying, whoops, that's a mistake. I think it's always really good just to kind of breeze over it and then mend it with just confidence. I honestly am still learning that. It's cool you're playing and doing what you're doing.
Keep doing it. Yes. Well, I think, speaking of guitar, I think the story goes your guitar gets stolen from your car. A friend gives you a reverb pedal and the rest is history.
Yeah. All I had at the time was like a microphone and a little jam man. So I just made what I had useful.
So, and earlier in the pandemic, you weren't really finishing, you said, your songs, and you said that was okay. It seems like you've really given yourself some grace in these times, and I think we all could learn from that and give each other grace. What has it been like as a musician?
Oh, it's hit, I think, artists in every department. This whole time has, I think, been harder for us than we would have ever expected, because just the freedoms of gathering have been so halted and different. And so mentally, I definitely love seeing people and going to shows, and obviously that was just at a standstill for so long. So trying to figure out how to internalize the good feelings I had before without actually experiencing them was really interesting. And I think that's what I spent so long on making music and sitting with it, because it almost didn't make sense, even though I knew what I was trying to say.
And, you know, you, as you said, you love to be out and about. You love to see new places, be on the road. And the past couple of years have been anything but that. So I would imagine that you have to draw some inner inspiration of seeing those new things or being awestruck. And that must be difficult.
Yeah, it definitely is hard. And I had two babies during the pandemic, so that's definitely been a life shift that brings me a lot of joy in a totally new way I never had experienced before. So I do feel really lucky in that way, but it's also been really different parenting during this time too.
Oh my goodness. Well, let's hear the end of Cyrus song, which is named for your son. I could see why Cyrus would be soothed to this song. Can you tell us the story of Cyrus?
Well, I'll try to give you the really quick version. But he was born in May 2020. And when he was born, he wasn't breathing. And he was helicoptered over to a hospital in Minneapolis. And we basically spent 6.5 weeks in the hospital while he was recovering, and he went through a few surgeries, and he is completely healed and has no effects from whatsoever from everything that has come about. So he is a miracle child.
That is so beautiful. How has music gotten you through that time, gotten Cyrus through that time?
It was bizarre because my husband and I were living out of the hospital and the Children's Hospital in Minneapolis during that time, and we kind of never left, and I didn't have any instruments or anything, and it was the height of George Floyd, and we were like 3 blocks from everything going on with rioting. So it was just layer after layer, and I came to a place where I couldn't look at news, I couldn't listen to music. I was just like so focused on Cyrus healing and wanting to be there mentally in a healthy place for him. So I didn't feel like I just was trying to shower him with a lot of love. And I ended up just starting to sing for him a lot because I didn't have anything else there. And yeah, spent a lot of time just like watching him and singing.
Well, I could imagine Cyrus saying, "Good enough for me, Mom. Just give me more of your voice and I will heal."
It kind of felt like that in his own way of, you know, yeah, he told me that in a strange way.
I wonder where you want to take your music next.
Hopefully tour gets back into just everything, but I've always combined music with motion and visuals, and I've worked with dancers, and I just want to collaborate more with different art mediums, and hopefully collaborate live too. I was getting into that a lot, where I'd play with a drummer and we'd do improv or a full band, and we were just loop with them while we just are making up things on the fly. And I hope I can do stuff like that a lot more.
Mm. Well, Sarah, thank you for sharing your music with us. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Sarah Elstran, the nunnery based out of the Chippewa Valley area, released her fourth album called Floating Gardens last month. Stay with us. News update is next. Let's listen more here on the Ideas Network. We're checking in with an independent music producer and DJ now on the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Female DJ representation is on the rise, but there's a long way to go. And according to the IMS Business Report last year, there is still quite a ways to go in order to get more female DJs around us. Despite improvements in female representation in the top 100 DJs, female DJs account for just 4% of demand. Have you DJed before? Are you interested in becoming a part of the scene? How much does inclusivity matter to you in music? Join in 800-642-1234. DJ and producer Claire DeRosa, her music lands in the genre of tech house. And at UW-Madison, she ran the Society of Professional Disc Jockeys, where she taught people how to DJ and connected them with gigs. Claire, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you for having me. This is so exciting.
Oh, good. I'm so glad you're here. Well, you're going to hit a milestone in the summer. I understand you'll play at your first festival. What kind of work did it take to get to this point in your DJing career?
Yeah, I've practiced a lot. I'm producing now, and I've made a lot of friends in this industry, which is the most important thing. And one of my friends is putting this festival together in California, so I'm very excited to be doing that.
So practice, produce, and network. I think those are the three things that I'm hearing from you. Starting with practice, what does that entail for a DJ? What do you do?
So it's really important to have someone that can kind of show you the ropes at first. It's a little bit intimidating, and if you don't have the right gear, it can be extremely confusing. But practicing, just knowing the music that you like and experimenting with the songs and how you can transition them is the best way to practice.
Oh, my goodness. I bet you do a lot of thinking about how how a song makes you feel. And then maybe you're going through jogging your mind as to where you would connect it to the next song.
Definitely. And how it fits the mood and how other people would react to it. Reading the crowd is so important.
When did you realize that professional DJing would be something you could do?
I went to Electric Forest, which is a music festival in Michigan in 2018. And my sister and I decided we were going to stay up all night in the campgrounds and listen to some DJ sets that some people were throwing. And they're playing tech house. They're playing all my favorite songs. And the energy was amazing. And I remember thinking, this is so cool. And they're doing a great job, but I think I could do it better. And I immediately came home and texted my friend who had been DJing for 3 years and said, please teach me. And I also reached out to someone on Instagram who had posted about the DJ club. And I didn't know him at the time, but I showed up to the first DJ meeting, and that's how I got into it.
Wow. So how do you make your mark as a DJ? What do you bring to the work of being a DJ and this in the industry?
Yeah, that's a great question. What you bring is your own sound. So being able to craft your own unique sound out of songs, or maybe it's your own productions, and also the energy you bring on stage or the energy you bring to a party is so important. There's a difference between a DJ who just stands there and plays songs that he likes, but, you know, is not really seeing what other people want, what the crowd wants. And that can be a whole game changer. Also, I think just having a woman on stage is a completely game changer. Like, you can change the whole vibe of a room when you see a woman on stage. I think I feel the same way. And yeah, I think that those things are how you make your mark as a DJ.
You really have to read your crowd, and they also look back at you as well, and they see a female DJ. They see that female representation. What are some remarks you've heard?
Yeah, So I played a gig in Chicago in over the summer, and it was a smaller venue on the south side, and it was a whole lineup of my friends that were all guys, and I was playing the last set. And this girl came up to me afterwards and was like, "I don't think you know this, but as soon as you got on stage, the girls that were just hanging with their friends in the corner became comfortable enough to like dance and hang out with people on the dance floor." And that was one of the best compliments I've ever gotten, because I think when you're in a club or you're in a bar, being comfortable and feeling like you deserve a space there is the most important thing.
That's really interesting too. And you've also gone to places where they didn't think you were the DJ who was showing up, I understand.
I think in the music industry, people have a cookie cutter image of who is a DJ. Like, what does a DJ look like? And you immediately think of a white guy, right? And that image sometimes affects who you think is going to show up. So I showed up for sound check at a gig, and we were waiting outside, and security let us in. And I'm wearing all black. I'm carrying my DJ board. And this guy was like, "Oh, sorry, you should come back later. We're doing sound check." And I was just like a little bit confused, and said, "Oh no, I'm also on the flyer. I'm here for sound check." And he was very apologetic, but a lot of people just don't think that women, short lady, or anyone else can be a DJ. That was a very interesting experience for me.
We're talking with Claire DeRosa, who is a DJ and producer based out of the Chicago suburbs. She attended UW-Madison, where she led the Society of Professional Disc Jockeys. You can join in. Have you DJed before? What are the challenges? How does it make you feel? And where do you fit in the industry? Have you attended an EDM festival? What was that like for you? 800-642-1234 to join in. You mentioned your DJ board. What are some of the basic tools that you need to get into DJing, and what do you have at hand?
Yeah, so everyone needs a DJ mixer or a DJ board. They cost around $200 for a bedroom mixer. And you need headphones, you need a computer, and you need the software that connects with the DJ board and allows you to see the waveforms and use the tools. And sometimes having that DJ board can be the payment can be a barrier to people. And then once you want to start playing in clubs, the mixer is completely different. It's called a CDJ, and those cost around $2,500 each, and they usually have four of them, but the workflow is completely different. So that can be a barrier, an access barrier to a lot of people, including myself.
How do you learn on a C, you know, how do you learn on that equipment if you don't have it?
That is the biggest thing. I think that everyone needs one friend who's been in the industry for a long time that has this equipment, who has had time to invest in it and say, "Hey, you can come over to my house and practice." And I've had people like that. A lot of my friends have had people like that too. And that is the greatest thing you can do for someone is open the door for them to play in clubs and bigger venues. And that's what I'm doing right now, is collecting the necessary equipment so I can be that person for other people.
There's that networking thing that I hear from you, how, you know, growing those relationships so that you can not only get the gig, but you can become a better DJ.
Definitely. And being involved in the DJ club has helped me know a lot of people that are involved in this.
What does producing entail? What does it mean to be an independent producer?
Producing is the coolest thing ever. It is so hard to figure out. And every single time I open Ableton, which is the software you use to produce, I'm learning something new. And it's really cool to be able to physically put your sound into the computer instead of just playing other people's music. This summer, I got to play my own original songs out to a crowd of people, which was such an amazing feeling. I think producing is very fulfilling, and it's a way for you to really express yourself.
What did that crowd radiate back to you? I would imagine that each time that you DJ, you learn something new that you can take back with you, perhaps change or tweak next time.
Definitely. I've made so many mistakes DJing. I've made mistakes DJing in front of other people. And in regards to playing my own music, the crowd reaction was awesome. And that was just such an exhilarating feeling that I've never felt playing other people's music.
And when you just, how would you describe Tech House? Like, what does that sound like to you?
Tech house is a combination of house music, a four on the floor house beat, and techno, which is more grimy, synthier style of music. And to me, tech house elicits a feeling in me of confidence. It makes me feel like I'm on top of the world and that it's just 100% exhilarance. And like, I just think that to share that feeling with other people is a gift that I was given, and I would like to give it to others too.
Oh, that's so interesting. Also, you say that professionalism is really important to teach novice DJs, that they have to really be professional at this. Why is that so important?
Definitely. I think a lot of people think about DJs or hometown DJs or their bar DJs as being like unsuccessful or drunk all the time and like just doing whatever they want. Those are words that I've heard from other people. And I think that changing the rap of being a DJ is so important, and showing up to a gig and treating it like a job, like you are working with other professionals and you should act accordingly. And that means you show up on time, the way you execute your set, you're ready. The way you treat club managers, the way you handle being mistreated is more important than anything. And there are bad people everywhere. So being able to treat this like an important job that it is such an important skill to have when you're just coming out of your bedroom saying, oh, I want to play a gig. There's much more to that than just mixing on the board.
How is the pay in these gigs? And as you gain more experience, does that pay increase with you?
Definitely. I think while you're in college, the pay is next to nothing. They like to pay in exposure, which I think is problematic because you're a college kid, you need money more than anything. And once you get more exposure, once you get better gigs and you get become again, better networked with people, that these things improve, that you start seeing more income from this.
What about those interactions with club managers and really having to negotiate and stick up for yourself? What is that like?
Yeah, I think it's very easy to get walked all over, especially if you're a college student. When I was in college, I was the one that was coordinating with the club managers and all the DJs and my executive board. And it's very easy to accept lesser than, especially if you don't know any better, and to accept lesser than treatment as well. And I think as you go through this and as you work with more people and you experience good treatment versus bad treatment and how you have to stand up for not only yourself, but the people you're advocating for, that learning curve is amazing, and that it can teach you how to really advocate for yourself in this industry.
We have DJ Claire DeRosa giving us a peek into her work at the mixer, what it's like behind the DJ table. What have you wanted to ask a DJ? What questions do you have about the work that goes into mixes and electronic music? How you find that on-ramp? Still time to talk, 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with Claire DeRosa here on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're talking about female artists representing within the electronic music industry and where it goes from here. How do you feel about female DJs pushing for gender equality and shaking up the industry? According to the Female Pressure Facts Survey that was published in 2020, there's been a steady rise in female acts in electronic music festivals over the past 8 years, but still only a quarter of all the acts are female. Still time to talk about DJing, 800-642-1234. DJ Claire DeRosa with us for about 10 more minutes. So Claire, what is your favorite type of crowd? Where do you really gel with a crowd?
My favorite type of crowd is one that is high energy and is excited for any drop, anytime. That it's a positive, you can really tell a positive crowd versus one that's more negative in the body language, in the way they're speaking with their friends. And a lot of times people think DJs can't see you, but you can see every single person in the crowd. So you're really perceptive as to who's there.
So what has DJing been like in a pandemic?
Oh yeah, I really haven't done too many gigs during the pandemic. I think I've done maybe like two. But once the pandemic is easing up and people are feeling better, I think I will definitely start investing more time in doing gigs.
Have you been concerned about wearing masks? Or, I mean, you want people to see your face as well, because that is radiating out onto the dance floor. So I imagine that, too, is really difficult to get that energy.
Definitely. Yeah, like I said, I haven't really done too many gigs during the pandemic. I'm afraid of doing that. But I think once summer hits, I'll definitely reconsider.
How do you find your inspiration, and especially now when you can't really be out and about, or you can't take in a lot of festivals and things like that? Where what do you draw off of?
Totally. Festivals are like such a huge draw of inspiration for me. So during the winter time, I'm listening to a lot of music, and I'm really just, my inspiration is just coming from playing around in Serum, which is a software synthesizer. So creating my own sounds and talking with my friends who also make music to try and keep that connection strong is very inspiring. And hearing other producers' music that they send me is also a really big push to say, oh, I can do better. I should practice more. Yeah.
So winter, it sounds like a lot of homework time, a lot of introspection and kind of putting pieces together.
Yes, I love homework time. I think it's awesome.
Because you're always finding something new, I would imagine, and you can continue to learn.
Definitely. I work with a mentor. He lives in Portugal, and we sit on Zoom for probably 3 hours at a time, working on some of my tracks, and he helps me understand some concepts and shows me things that he knows that can help me.
What has he taught you?
He's taught me like everything. We've spent so much time on Zoom, and this is a pure product of the pandemic. I would not have known him otherwise. And seriously, has helped me mix down my songs, understand things that I really never learned, and just share knowledge with me, which I've been very blessed to have someone like him.
Let's bring on a caller now. Ben is joining us from Madison. Hi, Ben. Go ahead.
Hey. How's it going? So, I just had a question. So DJing now is a lot different than the DJing that, I was a part of and experienced back when I was in college. And I'm just kind of curious if you or your group of friends or DJ friends ever, like, bring it back old school and go traditional vinyl sets, or even just kind of trade off vinyls and try and mix them together in that regard, just kind of bringing it back to where it kind of started.
That's a great question. I have some friends that do vinyl, but a lot of us now just use the CDJ mixers. I think part of that is because we don't have vinyl mixers. And also everyone learns on cheap Pioneer boards, which are like the $200 ones. So it's difficult to go from that to learning vinyl. But definitely interested in learning vinyl. I think that's a really cool art form. And some of my friends still scratch, and when they play gigs, they'll have the CDJs and then a couple vinyls on the outside. I think it's so cool to mix vinyl, but I really don't know how.
Have you experimented at all with scratching?
I've tried it in an hour session with my friend, but it is it's something that I definitely need to dedicate more time to. Honestly, it intimidates me a little bit.
Ben, do you do any DJing these days, or this was all strictly a decade or so ago?
Yeah, this was a bit ago. I'm young 40s now, so I used to DJ. I was never a good DJ, but I hosted an underground techno event at a bar for, 4 years and had a blast, met a lot of DJs and really enjoyed that time of my life. But it was all vinyl back then. We had decks, that everyone liked to play on, and everyone just kind of showed up with their bag of records and threw down. And I'm kind of intimidated more on the new material than I was then, like getting to put your hands on a vinyl and kind of match it up seemed almost simpler than all the tools that DJs have access to now.
Ben, thank you so much. What do you make of that, Claire, that all of this technology is a bit intimidating?
Yeah, I mean, I guess Ben and I have things to teach each other. That would be very cool. But I think the technology is intimidating. When you step up to a mixer and there's like 40 knobs on it. That is so intimidating. And even all the special effects, how you apply them, how you beat match, all these things are, it's a lot to learn. When I first was learning, it took me a long time and it was intimidating. But I think once you get the hang of it, and once you have that gear that you can just practice on and really go to war with it, then you feel comfortable enough to play in front of other people and play with other people.
We're talking with Claire DeRosa, who is a DJ and producer, makes tech music and tech house music. You can join in with your questions, 800-642-1234. Claire, Ben was saying that, you know, he never felt like a really good DJ. I would imagine that all DJs kind of feel that way, that they're never good enough. What do you do with those feelings?
So I've felt that way a decent amount of times, and I've talked to my mentor about it, and I was just so nervous for a gig, and I was like, I don't think, what if I'm not good enough? And, you know, asking the classic questions of self-doubt. And he told me, he was like, there is no such thing as a good or bad DJ. There are only prepared and unprepared DJs. And I will never forget that. So every time before a gig, I'm just creating my music. I'm figuring it out. I'm testing out songs. And I've had gigs where I was not prepared and I did not do well, but I have gigs where I'm overprepared and I did awesome. And that piece of advice really resonated with me, because it's not about like who you are. You're not good or bad. It's just how much work you're really putting into it.
Well, last year, Spotify rap data, it shows your music was streaming around 1,700 times. People are listening to your music from 36 different countries. Where do you see your music in the future? What does it hold?
Yeah, that was a really cool thing. That was my first song that I released on Spotify, and it was a really, really cool way to see who's listening to my music. In the future, I hope to produce a lot more music and to have it be played in clubs and be on Beatport, which is a website where you can buy professional music. And I'm excited to hear it played elsewhere, that as I get better as a producer, that it will be played on stages and by DJs that I really respect and love.
Claire, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me. This was very cool.
Claire DeRosa, DJ and producer based out of the Chicago suburbs. Her music falls in the genre of tech house. And at UW-Madison, she ran the Society of Professional Disc Jockeys, where she taught others how to DJ and connected them with gigs. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.